Welcome to Cognitive Rampage Podcast. This is your host, Adam Lowry, as always. I was trying to see if I could still do that really tacky radio voice when you're talking. It still comes up naturally sometimes. It's weird. It's taken me a long time, honestly, and I'm still not even there, to just be yourself. It's almost as if like you have to almost get reborn or rebirthed in front of a camera and microphone. It's been really uncomfortable for the last 2 years, and I like it because, you know, like I say, uncomfortable is where the change is. So I guess the more you sit in front of the camera and talk, I guess you're supposed to get more comfortable, but I don't know, man. I still get nervous before every show. Anytime I have a guest on or, excuse me, even if it's just me going on, I still get nervous. Heck, you can even look back on some of the podcasts and you can hear my heart rate elevated, and I'm trying to catch my breath. It's nerve-wracking, but it's fun, and I love doing it. So for those of you that have been listening, I love you so much. I can't thank you enough for, you know, spreading the podcast, talking about the podcast, liking it, sharing it, commenting, reviewing, whatever. Or even if you don't do any of that and you just listen, I have to thank you very much, because this is obviously not doing as well as it's doing because of me. It's the guest that I bring on. I say that to every one of them that come on here. So thank you to every guest that's ever been on the podcast. You make the show, and frankly, thanks for, you know, coming on and teaching me your life and sharing that with everybody that listens. Because frankly, I think people are the most interesting thing to study. I mean, nature itself, I love, but you know, it gives you your varieties too of everything to study, but from the intricacies of the human mind and what it can say and the people that it can reveal and the experiences and all the multiple perceptions that create such different people, it's hard not to just be fascinated with the human species itself, you know. And that's kind of what I am. I'm fascinated with the human species, with every person or story or philosophy, because look, we all only get this one experience. And when people, I think, decide to share their experience with you, it's hard to think of a bigger compliment, you know, that if somebody wants to sit down and say, yeah, let me tell you how I've perceived my life and my situations. And this is what I've learned. And this is as far as I've come. And this is what I've come to understand. For me, those are some of the most valuable things in life. If not the most valuable, I don't know, but I enjoy it. And so thank you, everybody that's listening and sharing. I love you much. If I could have you all on the podcast, I swear to you, I would. I'd have you all on the podcast so I could just talk to you about your own life and what you've been through. And hey, you may be out there and think that you got something to say and share. If you do, just email the Cognitive Rampage, email us, and share your story with us. Because, you know, like I said, this year, you know, I'm on a real mission to find competence, right? And one of my principles of change I talk about in my book is CCE. I talk about it a lot. If you're listening all the time, you may know it by now. But I talk about that competence breeds confidence, breeds enthusiasm. And enthusiasm is that state of happiness that we're all looking for. So technically, it's enthusiasm that you're after, enthusiasm that you're after. So, but competence can come in many forms. But for the most part, competence comes in experience. Whether it's in a physical experience you have, or researching and just finding the literary competence itself, or seeking out mentors or those that are experts in this area, or whatever area it is you're talking about. So apply that to self. If one can become self-competent, or researching and just then finding the literary competence itself, or seeking out mentors or those that are experts, if we can become self-competent, to become self-confident, then we can have an enthusiasm in self that leads to a self-happiness, right? And so in my book, I talk about how you apply that principle. And in my book, I actually apply it with you and apply it to the different principles and the inventories of your life that are also within the book. But if we can find that competence, you know, and lead to the confidence and find that enthusiasm, it can come from anywhere and everywhere, right? And I believe that's a way that we can reveal passions, because we may have hidden passions and loves that we don't know. And until you follow even the slightest interest to seek out competence, then you don't know. But at least in those experiences, you can at least become confident that it is or it isn't something that makes you happy, right? And knowing is better than wondering or regretting over time. So the interest that I threw in there on top of that CCE principle leads to one of my last inventory. I call them the tools of change. It's called the I to E inventory, which I've talked about a lot too, so bear with me if you know it. But I to E inventory just states that through interests and following those and seeking competence in those, we can be confident in those, and that can lead to enthusiasm or things or different paths to happiness in different facets of our lives. And we create that, right? So this year, all the way back, circling back, I get tangential. You know I do if you listen or if you know me. competence is what I'm after this season. On the cognitive rampage, and I'm chasing that competence with a hell of a enthusiasm and a hell of a passion. And the more guests that sit in front of me, what I'm trying to do is to just learn all I can, you know, why I'm here. And I don't want to be on my deathbed wondering about things, right? So I'm trying to have multiple experiences. And I believe that people can give you those experiences when they share their lives with you, when they share their philosophies with you. You can almost experience, you know, their perception. And through those perceptions, we can morph knowledge and more ideas into what we believe. Because in the essence, really, everything boils down to what you believe. Because you can't change anything in your life until you're willing to change what you believe. It doesn't matter. See, that's where change starts, is the belief, you know? So this year, I'm out to question everything that I believe. I'm questioning things that I know or think I know, things that I have thought to be fact. I humbly question myself, others, and the world. And for me, that's also a part of living a cognitive rampage, is questioning yourself and humbly questioning others and the world itself. And, you know, showing or being, I don't know, able to admit that you know what you don't know, because that's the only way you can really gain that competence. And so, like I said, this year on a mission, I'm out. I'm hungry for competence. I'm hunting it in every avenue. I'm not just sticking with mental health and addiction and all the different avenues and angles we took last year and issues we took last year, but I'm checking everywhere. You know, I got so many exciting guests coming up for February and March that are just living their cognitive rampage, and that's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for those people that are just living their cognitive rampage, that are chasing competence with a stoic enthusiasm daily and relentlessly pursuing optimization in mind, body, and belief. I mean, that is living a cognitive rampage. I mean, you can and will define it on your own once you read through the book too, you know, because I call it developing or living your cognitive rampage. And when you begin to live your cognitive rampage, it is yours. It's your custom lifestyle. See, in my book, it's not about me showing you the way, so to speak. It's a framework that's offered. And so you build the framework with your own choices, actions, and behaviors. And as you do that, that's why I say it's a dose of authentic revelation, because you're dosing yourself with your own authentic revelation, not mine. I'm not giving you the step-by-step process, because truthfully, there's no path. There's no one way, in my opinion. There's many ways. And so find the path that works for you. And for me, that's kind of what my book provides, is another path, but a path that you will create, a path that you lay the boardwalks down as you customize your path through the rest of your journey and change the narrative to your life and modify your own story through your own beliefs and becoming more aware of the authentic you. Because that's what you're trying to do, is shed the inauthentic self and the unauthentic life and reveal that authentic self. And I believe that anyone can change with just the power of yourself. You can motivate that change. You don't need pills. You don't need doctors. You don't need rehabs. These are helpful things. Don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to dice everything. But until you've truly full throttled the power of you, well, then I don't think you're really reaching, or really should be reaching out for everything else to fix you, because you can fix you. And maybe you fooled yourself, or you doubt your own self, or people have convinced you over time, or experiences that you've had in your past help you rationalize or irrationalize, that I like to say, reasons why you just can't do things. It's all about what you believe. If you're willing to question the impossible, then you're not planning for the inevitable. But if you're not willing to question the impossible, then you are planning for the inevitable. I like to say there is no reality, because that's where I think we need to start. Sure, you can argue semantics with me that there is a reality, that in front of you is a chair, or that is a wall, etc. This is not what I'm trying to do. It's more of a philosophical idea that there is no reality, that truly your reality is what you perceive. And that truth is based on your perception. I like to say that if you ride a roller coaster and you tell me it wasn't scary at all, and then I ride the roller coaster and tell you it was one of the scariest things of my life, who's telling the truth? See, that's right. We both are, and truth can be narrowed to a perception. And so I ask you, have you been willing and humble enough to question your own concrete beliefs about your life, your past, what you believe is your reality? And question that as only being merely a meticulous, put-together perception that you have created and you perpetuate with what you believe to be concretely true about your life, past, present, and now. But when you can question those beliefs, when you can move past those concrete irrationalities that, sure, life has helped mold to be real, you can break those with a simple change of thought, with a change of language. You begin to bust up those concrete beliefs, right? Man, I went off on a rampage there, but that's how passionate I believe about your own personal power in you to change what it is you do, to change your life, to change what you think. And it doesn't have to be this massive change. Your life could be going great how you like it, and you just may want to optimize, right? Because I believe we can always get better. See, we can get better, but just because we're striving to optimize doesn't mean that we're not happy in the now. See, finding that balance of being happy in the now while pursuing optimization is partly living your cognitive rampage as well. You have to be careful with self-acceptance camouflaged as apathy. It can be dangerous. I'm going to move on more to the podcast after that little rampage that randomly popped out, because the title of this podcast is listen to me, I almost went right back to competence. I'll be damned. It's assumptions and expectations, right? And I refer to these assumptions and expectations as being relationship killers, if you will. And they are. Many times they destroy relationships. They destroy what people believe and think. And I'll give you a couple examples. I got into a little tiff on social media with two people over the last month. And the tiff was simply, I was being demanded to do things in which I was in a path to do them and even go further to help someone. And I was literally bashed. I was emailed threats and warnings. I was posted wrongly against on Facebook and Twitter, etc. And I was just in disbelief on how I was really trying to help someone. I truly was trying to help someone. Both of these people, actually, I was trying to help. And it turned out not being so, see? And so I could only think that the people on the other side that I was trying to help possibly were just making assumptions on what I had done or accidentally done or may had done, and then took those assumptions and compared them to what their expectations of other people are, their expectations of the world or others, right? They may call them standards, right? You know, and so I'll tell you both of those, because look, I'm being transparent on this podcast, right? I'm sharing my life with you. We're growing competent together. Hell, my life is pretty much written in the book, so it's an open book per se. It's a shitty pun, but you know, I'll tell you one. I am talked to a lot about kids, about, you know, my friends, some of their friends, some people I don't even know, right, that I meet first or twice. And, you know, I talk about my daughter all the time, you know, all the time. She's the light of my life, period. She's the reason I do anything, kind of, you know, the first reason I do anything, you know. But, you know, I love her so much. And just talking about her gets me all joyful. So you may even hear that. So don't judge me. So she, it was adopted. I adopted her at 9. And when I adopted her, she's now 16. And her father's out of the picture and had been since she was 5. So he hadn't been around at all. And, you know, she is mine all the way, period. Blood in, blood out, period. She is a Lowry. She holds my last name. It's official on birth certificates, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And for one, they don't need to make it so damn expensive and difficult to adopt. You need to change that, by the way, out there. You know, especially when these parents and people are trying to take care of kids, you need to make it a lot more easier for them to do so. But that's left field. But I have people come up to me, and I don't have, I haven't had a child with my wife that's out of my body. All right, biological, if you will, whatever. And I know the people that come and talk to me and say this to me don't understand, and I know they don't mean harm. I know that. I get that. Because for me, above all else, in communication, I'll get to it a little bit later, but intentions, I think, is what can matter most. Intentions can matter most in communication, all right? So I understand the people that say this to me's intention. I really do, and I love you for it. I get it. But you got to really think about what you're saying. And I have people that come up to me and go, oh, that's your daughter. I say, yes. And she goes, oh, that's your adopted daughter when they find out. And they go, so when are you going to have one of your own? You know, it's just not the same. How dare you? How dare you say that to me? And if I was the man I was many, many years ago, there would be some principal shit going on. But I'm not that guy anymore, right? I'm way different. It was 10 years ago. But when it comes to my daughter, you know, it's hard not to be that way, right? I think we all get pretty protective. But what you really look at what you're saying, and you may be listening to this podcast at the same time going, well, yeah, it's not the same. How do you know? And I don't know because, look, I can't say it because I don't have a blood child, as someone would call it, or a biological child. But I think love is the same as love. And you know what? I'm even going to go a step further and say that I think parents that adopt have it a little bit tougher because you know why? We choose to love. See, when you're born or that baby comes out of you or you, either way it came out of you, right? You feel this biological connection that you talk about and that you want to say that, you know, it's just in you. You'd love no matter what, unconditionally. Although the way I see some parenting happening, that ain't so. But I can't feel that for my daughter. All I'm trying to say here is watch what you're saying. Really think about what you're saying before you approach somebody because there's assumptions and expectations at play here, see? If you assume that the way you feel about your child is just different than you think an adopted parent can feel or is allowed to feel or could feel or should feel, then you take that assumption and you have an expectation that, well, you must assume that I want, as you would say, my own child. I mean, literally, just by saying that to me, you're telling me that my daughter is not my own child. See, I know a lot of adopted people. And they would beg to differ if they talked about their step-parents. Much different. Because what are you telling my daughter? So, you think you're ever going to talk to your real dad? Because now you're not even calling me a real dad. See, this is the stretch of it. Now, I don't want to be one of those sensitive to all things that are just words either, right? I don't want to play that up, right? And trust me, I know there is a wussification of America going on, and Roxy in the background agrees with me. Like I say to myself, or I'm willing to question myself, that maybe that's just the time that that person was in, right? Where that just was common talk, right? Like I said, I know their intentions. It would be different if I thought their intentions were evil, right? Or set out to be harmful. But I know they're not. I know they're not. So those of you that have ever said that to me, I love you. Don't worry about it. I know what your intentions were. I get that. I'm only bringing this up because I've had strangers that don't know me say this to me. I've heard people talk about it. And I want you to just think about it. What if you were the adopted child and you overheard that? Think about it. You can't find your own dad or you feel like he's left you. You're sitting in a room, you've been you and your mom, and this nice man's come around and loved you and call each other dad and make it official and real. And then you show up and go, so you ever going to have your own one day? And she hears that from the back room. Yeah, that's what I mean. be careful of assumptions and expectations. We make assumptions based on what we expect. But really what you're doing when you say that is you're assuming that everyone should think just like you. I expect everyone to act or respond to me, the world, or others, or my behavior or words in this way. And if you don't, well, then I'm going to assume something else. And that's why I say the relationship killers, because I'll connect it now to a relationship. What relationships tend to do is they set these assumptions or they set these expectations, But you have to be careful. See, what I like to talk about are their standards, expectations, and preferences. Standards are your deal breakers, right? Standards are, look, this is a minimum. I won't be hit. I won't be cheated on. Whatever your standards are. Standards I think you need. Once you start setting expectations, or once those lines become blurred between standards and expectations, well, then it becomes difficult to leave or stay or judge things in the relationship. Because then you're like, all right, I expect them not to yell at me or slap me in the face or get in my face or punch a hole in the wall. I expect that. But, well, they do it anyway, and so I'm just going to assume that's part of it, and you move past it. And so now is an expectation. Now, you may go into the relationship going, look, I have a standard. I won't tolerate violence. And then they hit a wall, but not you. And because it's an expectation rather than the standard deal breaker that you set in your mind, although you said, well, I expect it, then you just kind of assume it's okay. And then slowly over time, it assimilates to being normal. And that's how people just end up in abusive relationships and don't even mean to, where they start to say, I don't know, they just changed. It's just slowly accepted, right? And you accept that over time. But you have to be careful when you're discussing or talking with friends, coworkers, bosses, and especially the ones that you love most, that you're not enforcing your expectations based on your language. And if you enforce those expectations based on your language, then you start to make assumptions. And I'll give you an example. Let's say there's a couple that's together and they've been married for X amount of time. Been a good, decent relationship for a while. Nobody's hurt anybody. They've been, frequently sexual with each other or physical with each other. They've been kind. No big deals over time. Well, let's just say one of them becomes standoffish maybe, right? Maybe the other one notices that they're turning their phone off or have a passcode on their phone. Or they're not talking as much, or the physical relationship begins to slow down, right? And so what does the other half start to do? Well, I have expectations. I have expectations that, look, we've been physical at least X amount of times. You've been doing this, right? You start comparing past behavior to their current behavior, and then you're looking at expectations. Well, I expect you to be happy. I expect you to sleep with me, right? We start looking at these expectations. When those expectations are not met, what does the other one start doing? You start making assumptions, right? Well, if they're not having sex with me, who are they having sex with? If they didn't have a passcode now, why do they have it now? Now, see, for all of you that may have been hurt or cheated on before, all of you may be listening to this going, yeah, why? Trying to answer all those questions. That is forcing your expectations and creating negative assumptions. You may expect someone to cheat on you, because it's happened before. And so you take that expectation, then you assume it of the person you're with now. And you could be ruining the relationship that you're currently in by doing so. And it's unfair to them. See, we bring our expectations into relationships, right? They call it baggage, etc. But I think we bring our expectations. So you have to be careful when you're communicating or making assumptions based on something you expect. And that leads me to my second story and a guy that really irritated the shit out of me. I got to be honest. Really irritated the shit out of me. And I allowed that, right? We allow our own emotions. So let me be truthful. He didn't irritate me. I allowed my own thoughts to create my irritated feeling. Okay. That's the legitness of it. And that's clinical. Legitness. That's clinical. It's in the DSM, I think. So I do a post, had a great podcast with someone. I didn't realize that this person had shown up at this friend's studio, snapped a picture or two, and I didn't realize that because the guest on the show is quite artistic. I thought maybe he took it. Anyway, I make the post, I post the picture. In about 15 minutes, I get a comment on the post that said, hey, credit this guy for his picture. And I thought, oh, you know what? I forgot. And if you look, all my pictures are credited with who takes them, but I forgot to do this one. And sometimes Steve actually does the posting, but this was me. And I'm like, all right. So I comment real quick on, I said, hey, this is the guy who did it on Facebook, right? Just so his name was on there real quick till I could get to the editing part, right? To get to the back end of the site and help. I shit you not, man. Not 30 minutes before I could get to the email, I get this long threatening email from the photographer. Okay. Now, I'm making no money on this guy's picture. I'm doing nothing with the picture. It's been up for less than an hour. And I've already commented that I'll be changing it soon. Here's the guy's link. I get this long threatening email and this condescending tone where he tells me that, frankly, he's disappointed. Wow. And he orders me to credit it ASAP. Well, I don't know about you, but I do remember where I come from. And I don't care how many degrees and pieces of paper that I get. I'm a grown-ass man. You don't tell me that I need to do anything. Because the truth is, I don't have to do a damn thing. Now, what irritated me and what I allowed myself to get so upset for, because remember, I also say anger is not real, right? I like to say that anger is really fear and hurt. So if you're feeling angry, ask yourself, how are you hurt and how are you afraid? Well, the truth is, I was hurt because I shit you not, I was literally about to credit this guy and then email him if he would like to possibly come on the podcast for a couple minutes and talk about what he does on one episode because I felt bad. It'd been 30 minutes, 40 minutes, you know what I'm saying? An hour maybe, tops. I'm literally writing that email and that email comes in almost. And I said, wow. Now that's when you go, man, I got bit, right? But this is where I even failed, where I said, all right, I had an expectation. I had an expectation for someone to be kind and give me a second. And when they didn't, and they responded rather rudely, well, I made assumptions that this person was just a plain fucking asshole. So I left him some choice words, immediately deleted every post or picture I'd ever used within that 45 minutes, which cost me about 2,000 downloads and views, by the way. Deleted all of those things just to make him happy and said, forget it, used a different picture. And then he proceeds to start going on social media, Twitter, and et cetera, to tell me how I had stolen his picture. I can't believe that. Twice. I set out to help somebody. And both times, I got treated, and people made assumptions as if I was out to get him. He even used in an email to me, the guy with the picture, he goes, you weren't going to change it until you got busted. See, remember I told you that language can shape your expectations and cast your assumptions? So when he sends an email to me that says, I got busted, he made an assumption that I was out to steal his photography. And then he had emailed to me that people had stolen his art before, etc. And see, like I said in the beginning, in the relationships that we bring our expectations to the relationship that we call baggage. Well, he brought his expectations and his baggage to our could have been growthful and positive relationship. Instead, he chose to make assumptions based on some expectations because he expected someone to credit this picture immediately, as if people don't forget things. I even responded to him by saying, hey, I had forgot, we're in the middle of it. And that's when he fired back the warning and the demand. And I thought, wow. So we both failed there. See, we both had expectations and assumptions and then played them off on each other. And that's how I wanted to connect all this for you, from relationships to your bosses, to your friends. However you're talking to someone, you have to be very careful of those expectations that you're bringing into the communication. Because what you really sound like saying is if you get frustrated with someone and you're angry at them, right, and you're allowing your hurt and fear to take you over and you let your own mind and thoughts create yourself to be angry because you make yourself mad. No one else on the planet makes you mad. Your thoughts create your emotions, create your behavior. I know. I'll cover that in another thing. It's all in the book too, so don't start freaking out. But we can show up, and essentially what we're saying is if we're upset at someone, we're really going, how come you're not wired like me? Why don't you believe like I do? And how come you haven't experienced life like I have? If you would have done all those things, then you would believe just like I do. See, that's how you really sound. What you're really saying when you look at someone that you love, your friend or whatever, and you're upset at them going, what the fuck? How couldn't you? Why wouldn't you? What would it's you being hurt and afraid that you could be hurt, that what they said or what they did hurt your feelings. You could be hurt or afraid that you're wrong or maybe make it or maybe look stupid in the future or maybe they set out to hurt you. And then you cast those things forward. So you need to be aware. So you got to know what your expectations are and then separate those through standards. So you remember I told you standards come first, then you set expectations. Last would be preferences. But remember, preferences limit your options. So if I prefer this, well, then that's definitely going to limit. If I stick to all of my standards, all of my expectations, and all of my preferences, my options are rather limited. And then the possibilities are limited. But if you can erase those and say, look, these are my standards. This is at a minimum that I will take, that I will accept, that I will deal with, that I will live with, that is okay, and that I need. Now, I can have expectations, but you have to understand if those expectations somehow get violated by your perception, you have to be willing to know, wait, these are just my expectations. And the hardest part is not beginning to conjure up assumptions based on your expectations. I appreciate you listening to the Cognitive Rampage podcast. I hope you like it. It was about 30 minutes of just myself giving you a little, hey, what's up? If you like it, if you thought it was cool, if you thought it was stupid, I don't care. Put a comment. I do care. That's not what it sounds like. I don't care if you think it's stupid. What I'm saying is if it's positive or negative, post. Tell me it sucks. Tell me it's awesome. Tell me to go home. I don't care. Feedback is what I love. It's how I get better. People can't change what they don't know is broken. That's the other tip I'll also give you in a relationship, right? People can't change what they don't know is broken. So if you have a bunch of assumptions based on your expectations, and you haven't just communicated that to the person, simply asked them or said, hey, what about this? Then those assumption expectations are going to ruin that relationship, right? And, excuse me. So, oh man, I got all left field there. Assumptions, expectations. I hope you enjoyed it. This was the talk, those relationships. Oh, yeah, that's what I was saying. Man, I can get quite tangential. Look that word up. It was just on a biopsychosocial exam that I used to have to do. And that word's always stuck with me because I was constantly called tangential, right? So see if I can circle back. People can't change what they don't know is broken. Thank God for pens and paper. So unless you've told the person you love or the person in your life what you're assuming or what you're expecting is going to happen or what you're assuming is broken, well, then they can't fix it, and that's not fair to them. You can't sit back and just assume they should know. If you just expect them to pick up on your behavior changes or little cues you drop, well, that's your fault. Because people cannot change what they don't know is broken. You need to kindly inform them. And if you're the one being informed about what's broken, you have to understand, how could someone else tell you what's broken without offending you? See, that's one of the biggest tricks about relationships. Damn, I'm going off again. I started in the podcast, but I don't care. I like this part. See, that's one of the hard parts about relationships, right? Is they can't fix what they don't know is broken. So if they don't know, they can't change it. And so if we expect them to go, well, they should just notice, right? They should just know. If they, well, I love them, or they should just know. They don't, and they shouldn't just know. That's shooting all over yourself. You don't want to shoot all over yourself in a relationship. They shouldn't do anything. If something's broken, let them know. And if somebody's trying to tell you something is broken, don't take it as a personal attack. Think about this. How would you tell the person that something is wrong or something hurts or you're afraid of something that they do, say, think, or behave without them thinking you're attacking them? See, it's almost impossible. If you can come up with that way, then write a book and make it relationships because you'll be very rich. Look, I say there's no one way on relationships. Otherwise, there wouldn't be so many books on it. There'd be like a book or two, and that would be the way. But there isn't. And so you have to be humble enough that if somebody's telling you what's broken, you have to be appreciative. Because if you also remember that people can't fix what they don't know is broken, and someone you love is telling you what's broken, please try not to take that as a personal attack. Take that as they love you enough to be able to tell you what's broken so you don't just come home one day and they're gone. Because that happens. Don't let the resentments build up. Communication, open and honest, will help those resentments stay away. Because resentments are those last killers of relationships, because assumptions and expectations lead to resentments. And resentments ruin relationships. But I hope you're taking care of you. I hope you're taking care of everybody in your life or those that you love. And I hope you're communicating lovingly with them and humbly with them. And I'll leave you with a little quote that I liked. Serving others and helping others while you're here is free of charge. And it doesn't take an education, money, or status to serve others. Serving others is what makes us truly legendary. I hope you're taking care of you. Thanks for listening to Cognitive Rampage Podcast. I love you. I mean it. Take care.